This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming, to movies, TV shows and pop culture, to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Vera Payne here, and thank you for joining me. You know, President Trump recently released his prospective budget cuts for 2018. To my surprise, the video game industry may be affected by these proposal cuts. To find out how and why, I reached out to my friend Kyle Hansen, who's editor at attackofthefanboy.com. Thanks for joining me, Kyle.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Recently, I read an article in Kotaku that the video game industry is going to be affected by Trump's defunding of the U.S. arts. So is that true?
Yeah, I mean, looking at the budget that he's proposed, this was definitely some good reporting done by Kotaku looking at this. And we have the National Endowment for the Arts, and looking deep into that, and the National Endowment for the Humanities, you see that it actually does fund a lot of video game development and stuff like that. I mean, but you're not going to see immediate results from this if this does go through. You're not going to have problems with, like, your big budget AAA games. But what this does is it does a lot of funding into educational programs, both in terms of using video games for education and funding the education of video game developers. So we see actually, you know, over $1 million in funding has come from this before, just for video game stuff. So you will see an impact. Will it be immediate? Probably not, but you'll see down the road, you know, this is a big thing of using video games in schools. And so losing that funding would be very detrimental, especially as those programs are just getting kind of started, you know, getting kids to actually learn using. I've seen, you know, Minecraft being used in schools to teach things. And if those programs get cut, it's definitely a blow.
You know, it's kind of funny. So I was thinking, I've never heard of these programs before. So I'm glad you said that these are kind of new. They use Minecraft in school. Like, how would that be used?
Yeah, this was something I saw actually at MineCon a couple of years ago when it was down in Orlando. I don't know that it's directly tied to the National Endowment for the Arts or Humanities, but just, you know, using it as an example of how you would use a video game, there were classes that used it to teach, you know, architecture, how to build buildings, and I believe the UN was actually using it to, I can't remember exactly what they were doing, but they were using it to kind of show children how these countries evolved and how they grew and how architecture worked and different stuff like that. So, I mean, Minecraft is just such a loose set of tools, and it's so easily modified that you can use it for almost anything. And so it's the perfect example of how you can use a video game to educate in a number of different ways.
So it's not just for, like, future game developers. This is actually for other types of professions.
Yeah, it's both. I mean, you definitely see these programs funding the education of future game developers, but also just these sorts of programs like Games for Change that Kotaku pointed out has received $400,000 in funding from this National Endowment, and that's sort of funding the creation of different games that educate people about different topics, you know, and losing that funding would definitely hurt them.
Speaking of changes in the video game industry, what about episodic games? Are they affecting it at all?
So episodic games are kind of in an interesting place right now. They really took off with Telltale's The Walking Dead, which came out, I believe, in 2011 or 2012. And they've been running wild with episodic games. They're still doing it. They've got The Walking Dead A New Frontier right now, which is the third season of that series. They're working with Marvel on Guardians of the Galaxy. Any Telltale game is going to be an episodic game. And after the success that they saw with The Walking Dead, a lot of game developers kind of jumped on the bandwagon. And you saw other games, some not so good, some very good. Like Life is Strange was a very good episodic game. But we are seeing, I would say, a downturn in episodic releases. There was a big spark around it, and people were really excited. But you start to see what happens with these sorts of things is that people prefer to wait. They actually don't want to enjoy the game piecemeal. They don't want to play an episode and wait for the next one, which can take you know, 1 or 2 months, sometimes 3 months for the next episode to come out, and they're just kind of left hanging there. I enjoy it. I personally like doing that, mostly because I have such a busy schedule with video games, but it's nice to be able to sit down, play 2 hours of a game, and then, you know, you wait and the next episode comes out. But we do see a lot of people just wait until the whole season is out, almost like what you see in television right now with Netflix. People just want to binge it. They just want to sit down, start to finish, and play this entire game. So I think episodic is in a very interesting place. It's not exploding like I think a lot of developers thought that it would, but it's still there, especially with Telltale. Telltale does it so well, and they explain their reasoning behind the release schedule, which is that they actually take feedback. That's one of the things that episodic gaming allows is, you know, you can put out one episode, see how people play it, see how they react to it, what characters do they like, what storylines did they enjoy, what choices did they make, because that's a big part of Telltale's experience. And then you can tailor the next few episodes off of that information.
You know, you just said that, you know, that there's a lot of work that obviously goes into these. How come these games are so much cheaper than like a full-fledged game?
Well, Telltale has a very good method that they, until very recently, have used the same engine for almost a decade. I don't know exactly, but they have a very small set of tools to create these games. And so it's, I don't want to say it's easy because it's definitely not, but I think for them the hardest part is writing this story and plotting out all of the choices that they allow you to make and how that's going to change the story. But crafting the game is easier for them than a lot of other developers just because of this tool that they have. It's called the Telltale Engine, I believe. And they've updated it recently. Batman was the first game to utilize the new engine. And we've seen a lot of improvements to the way that their games play. It's a little less buggy. It looks a little bit better. But at the end of the day, if you look at a Telltale game, it's not the sort of polish that you would see on a $60 game. It's not top of the line graphics or anything like that. So for them, it's more about that story and about that experience. So yeah, I would assume that that's how they keep their prices a little bit low, is that they have a very good method to creating these games.
Yeah, when it comes to episodic games, it always kind of reminds me of Choose Your Own Adventure. I feel like a kid again, and you know, you can always go back to one point and make a different choice. It's kind of fun.
That's exactly, yeah, that's how it feels. And then they've definitely done a good job of putting in the a good save method so that you can go back and try out different options and see how everything goes differently, which can be a little out there. It can be a completely different experience, or it can kind of stay the same depending on what those choices are.
So Injustice 2 is going to be released in May. What do you think of the game so far?
So I actually haven't been able to try this one out. It's been tucked behind closed doors. Ooh. I was recently at PAX, and I was hoping that it would be there, but it wasn't. So I haven't played it, but in terms of gameplay, I don't think that we're expecting a huge shift from the first game, which is good, because the first game was fantastic. It was extremely well-received. You know, it's following that visceral combat that you see in games like Mortal Kombat. What we're really looking for from this sequel is an extension of that storyline and more characters, which they've already announced a ton of new characters, Poison Ivy, you know, Darkseid, Firestorm. If you're deep into the DC mythos, there's going to be a lot of stuff here for you.
Yeah, the storyline was like really good in the first Injustice, so I really hope that they'll be able to continue like have that with the storyline. Now, when it comes to the game, I heard that you can buy like gear to enhance your character. You're like, what's that about?
So they're introducing a new kind of loot drop, because that's what every video game needs these days, is some sort of loot drop. And those do enhance your character. I think most of the changes are cosmetic, which are always fine. You know, no one has a problem if you just have some sort of loot drop system, even if you have to pay for it, that's going to give you a cool new outfit. But it does sort of get into gray areas when it starts to change your abilities and makes you maybe a better fighter. So we'll have to wait and see how this all pans out, but it's definitely a big question mark looming over this. People are a little concerned, but we'll have to wait and see how it does come together because maybe it'll be okay. And with these sort of systems, you do get them for free as long as you play more of the game. The paying money is sort of a workaround, a quick thing where if you're like, I don't have the time to play this game every single day to get the item that I want, here's $5. We'll have to see how that one pans out when the game actually hits.
Yeah, I am totally guilty of that. I will pay of the five because it's $5. I can spare five, you know.
Yeah, it saves me a couple hours.
Absolutely. But you know what? This does remind me of the Street Fighter Cross Tekken, where they had a gem system. That did not work out. I mean, how do they expect this to work out?
You never know. They put this stuff in. That's the big new game design thing is these loot systems. It keeps people playing, whether they pay for them or not. It keeps people engaged in the game. So in terms of what the developer is thinking, they're thinking this is going to keep people playing our game all the time. It's going to keep it on the top of those Twitch charts, all of that sort of stuff, because people are going to want all this loot. They're going to want to get it. Even whenever we do see these sorts of backlashes, it usually doesn't impact sales and even the sales of the items in the game, the in-app purchases and stuff like that. We see a lot of vocal anger towards stuff like this. We don't see the actual consequences of it. And so that's probably what they're looking at. If they actually are making a system that's not good, like we definitely can't say that at this point. But if the system does turn out not okay, I doubt that they're going to actually get hurt by it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because the first game, First Injustice, I really loved it. I love the story mode. And most times with fighting games, the story mode isn't very good to begin with. And this was a pleasant surprise. And, for Injustice 2, like new outfits, I'm kind of hoping, because I love the cosmetic part of any game, I'm hoping that there's like legendary outfits that you can't pay for and you have to play for, because that would keep me playing.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I mean, with this many characters, just the customization options alone are going to keep you busy with the game.
So a new Mass Effect has come out, and I've been hearing some good things. I've been hearing some bad things, and it's always like one side or the other. What was your take on it?
So I tried to remain objective. I did the review for this game. The review is out now, and a lot of reviews are out, and it's a very divisive game. I was a huge Mass Effect fan. I loved all three of the original games. I played them start to finish a couple of times. And from that mindset, I was very disappointed in Mass Effect Andromeda. It did not continue that legacy. It had a lot of opportunity, a lot of areas where it could have improved, and it sort of fell flat, especially in the story area and somewhat in the character area, which to me are what makes Mass Effect Mass Effect. But at the end of the day, I put dozens of hours into this game, and I was entertained from start to finish. So I can't say it's a bad game. There's this very strong backlash against the game, and I don't think that it's necessarily justified, because it is still a enjoyable experience. I gave it a 4 out of 5. That's a pretty solid score.
Yeah, that is.
That was trying to remain objective. If you are a huge Mass Effect fan and you loved the first three games because of the story and the characters, you're going to have a rough time with this, but it's not a bad experience. You're not going to hate that you bought this game or that you put a lot of time into it, but it is not, it's not holding up to that legacy.
So I thought that it was a trilogy. Mass Effect, there's 1, 2, and 3, and then that was it. So where does this one place in? Is it a continuation? Is it, are they going to start a new saga on it? Like, how does this work?
Yeah, this is essentially the start of a new saga.
Okay.
If you played to the end of Mass Effect 3, I won't spoil it, but you kind of have a choice there at the end that alters everything. And so there's no way to go from that. You can't make a sequel to Mass Effect 3 because of the way that it ended. And so what they did instead was sort of a spinoff in a lot of ways. It's billed as the new big Mass Effect series, but what happens is, this isn't spoiling it because this is right in the beginning of the game, you are part of the Andromeda Initiative that leaves the Milky Way during the events of Mass Effect 2. And then 600 years later, you wake up and you're in the Andromeda Galaxy. So you are far from the Reapers. You are far from anything familiar with the first three games. You still have a lot of the same races because they came with you. They were part of this Andromeda Initiative, but all the planets you visit are all in the Andromeda Galaxy, and it's all new. And where that kind of fell flat was that I was expecting a lot of brand new stuff. Mass Effect just has so many different races, and it's so diverse in terms of what you see. But you really don't actually encounter all that new stuff, and you're in a whole new galaxy. So it felt a little unfortunate that they wasted this potential of a brand new galaxy, hundreds of thousands of light years across the universe, and you're still kind of doing the same stuff.
You think it would have been better if they just didn't put Mass Effect in there and it was just like a brand new series?
Yeah, that could have held up a little bit better. It definitely had a lot of expectations laid on it from being a Mass Effect game. I also, in my review, said maybe this would have been better as an actual spinoff where it's still in the Milky Way, but like a section that wasn't part of the main story. So that you had two big expectations, that it would be a Mass Effect game, and that it would be a bunch of brand new stuff because it's in Andromeda. And it kind of didn't hit the levels that it needed to on both of those counts. And if they'd pulled back on any one, it may have been a better experience.
Yeah, you know, but Mass Effect, it had so much like stuff to it that anything afterwards, you're now in the shadow of your awesome sibling. I don't think there's any way to recover from it anyways.
Yeah, no, that it does definitely linger over the entire experience of you running, you know, you get your crew together and the whole time you're kind of in your head doing this check. Are these guys as cool or as interesting as the characters that I had loved and grew to love over three games? And I mean, some of them are there. I wouldn't say that they completely fail on the character front. And a lot of people have been pointing out some animation issues and dialogue issues with the writing where it gets a little kind of cringy, a little weird sometimes. So all of those things just kind of add up and you start to really, not enjoy it as much as past Mass Effect games. It was kind of rough in a few spots.
You know, I'm glad you talked about the animation because that's actually one of the biggest things about it. Why was it so, like, could you give an example, like, what we could expect from the fails of the visuals?
Yeah, so luckily I will definitely say it's not as bad as the internet might make you believe. People like to take, you know, little sections where it fails and just plaster them out there like that's representative of the 60 hours that you're going to put in this game. 90% of the time, everything will look fine, except that the faces do have a kind of a lifeless look to them, especially the eyes. So that's always rough, especially with a game that's so dialogue heavy and so story heavy. So hopefully that, I don't know what they'll do about that, but, and then, you know, every once in a while, the animation for the face just looks a little wrong. You get kind of an uncanny valley thing where it kind of creeps you out a little bit, but those are very rare, admittedly. Most of the time it functions fine, but when those do happen, you know, you'll have a character, crab walk where their run animation gets a little weird. Whenever you talk to people, they kind of do a weird little spin move to turn towards you. It's little stuff like that does take away from the experience.
Yeah, for those that are listening, when the dead eye look, like reference Polar Express, I think that was the one with Tom Hanks. Yeah, that was horrible. And that's the dead eye where it's like you can tell these things are not, you know, they're demons. They have no soul at this point. And they're going to try to like do something to you. No, I'm just joking. But that's what the dead eye thing is. And it's unnerving because you're right. When it's story heavy, you really need to kind of connect. And that's how you do it is through the eyes. And it's bad enough. You already know it's CGI. Like I already know it's fake. But for it to be really, really badly faked, that's what it really gets funny and weird, you know?
Yeah. It's definitely unfortunate because, I mean, looking back at those first three games, you became attached to these characters. Even if they weren't real, they felt real to a lot of people. And that's what this game needed to do. And, you know, sometimes it does it. There's a couple of characters that I really enjoyed, mostly the alien characters, because they look better because they're not human and you don't have any sort of reference. If they could have made the characters look better, it really would have helped with that connection and maybe helped people overlook some of the animation issues and weird dialogue that pops up every once in a while.
Yeah, when it comes to the animation, the crab walk, I think those are the funniest thing ever because, you know, it sometimes happens at the most serious point in a game.
Yeah, gotta save the galaxy after I do this crab walk.
Exactly. And those are the best parts, at least for me. Like, so, you know, you've had a half hour of being like super intense, super serious. And then, you know, out of left field, here comes a crab walk. Thanks, Kyle, for joining and giving us the latest video game news and reviews. Check out Kyle's work at attackofthefanboy.com. That's attackofthefanboy.com. You can also follow Kyle on Twitter at conman72. That's K-O-N-M-A-N-7-2.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.